Well, ladies and gentlemen, you're not listening to me. This is the weirdest broadcast I've ever done, because I think probably, well, let's see. All of the network affiliates right now are plugged into President Bush. So perhaps the only people who are actually listening to this broadcast as it's originating are the fine listeners of XM Satellite Radio. And hello to, I'm going to greet each of you by name. XM Satellite Radio, you'll find out about it, ladies and gentlemen, but it's, you know, it goes to your car, blah, blah, blah. So we're in a new age. Let's talk a few moments, though, about the age we've been in. Oh, I should say, in case this broadcast sounds different than it normally does, I've never been opposite a presidential speech before, so this broadcast is not originating from the Le Show Dome. It's originating from a different location, which I guess should be known at this point as the Museum of Zero Tolerance. But we've clearly, at this point, entered phase three of this story, which is America Strikes Back. Let's pause for a moment to reflect on phase two, which we've just been through. And that was the phase in which we were returning to pseudo-normalcy. But what was really going on behind the scenes was a titanic struggle to be at the top of the new order of priorities. That's what was going on in Washington, D.C. this last couple of weeks. I don't know if you've been desirous of paying attention to it, but the lobbyists have been working full-time to make sure that their favorite premises and favorite policies and favorite projects would be on that priority list, as things we had to do for the recovery, for the for the confidence of the country. We had to get tax cuts for business, or we had to get this. Here's one. Let's see. I have it here in my pile of stuff. You're not doing anything. You're just watching the president, right? Liz Cheney, the wife of the vice president. Here you go. She disputed educators who want to teach more multiculturalism in the wake of the September 11th disasters, promoting instead an America First curriculum. Quote, if there were one aspect of schooling from kindergarten through college to which I would give added emphasis today, it would be American history, said Ms. Cheney, a well-known critic of political correctness. This is in response to the Deputy Chancellor of the New York City Schools, Judith Rizzo, who said those people who said we don't need multiculturalism, that it's too touchy-feely, a pox on them. We have to do more to teach habits of tolerance, knowledge, and awareness of other cultures. Cheney agrees that children need to be taught about world cultures, but she says to say it is more important now implies that the events of September 11th were our fault, that it was our failure to understand Islam that led to so many deaths and so much destruction. Unquote. A time of national crisis, she adds, is a time to study national history. Well, yes and no. Yes and no. We in this country have been living, I don't know if the president's telling you this right now, but we've been living in a wonderful bubble the last 10 years or so. And it's not an accidental bubble. It's a bubble constructed partly out of our own desire and partly out of the bottom line mentality of the people who run our great journalistic enterprises, who've decided that we didn't like news about other countries. It wasn't something we wanted. It wasn't on our wish list. So they were going to be good to us and not force it down our throats. And in the process, they were going to save some money by closing down the bureaus in Rome and Athens and Tashkent. Nobody had a bureau in Tashkent. Relax. So, because we didn't crave news from abroad, we were starved of it. And so whatever America has been doing abroad, and whatever consequences it may have had, whatever attitudes it may have engendered, we didn't know about it. Hence, you've got David Letterman going, why would they? And you've got Liz Cheney saying, no, we have to teach more about America. We know a lot about America here. We know America really well. It's what's outside those oceans that we don't really we never really cared about, and now we don't even know about. Anyway, president's still speaking, so I'm filling. Because nobody's... Hey, XM. Hey, Barbara. Hey, Connie. You XM people, we love you. So what are we looking forward to? Says Marlon Fitzwater, the former press secretary for the first President Bush. I think that, quote, I think this conflict is going to require a suspension of freedom and rights unlike anything we have seen, at least since World War II, he said. I'm going to read that quote again, because I'm filling. Quote, I think this conflict is going to require a suspension of freedom and rights unlike anything we have seen, at least since World War II. So this may be my last chance, ladies and gentlemen, to be on the air, but it may be my last chance to point out this, and people have asked me about it, so this is why, for the four of you who are listening, I'm going to nail it down as much as can be. A senior White House official said a credible threat had been phoned into the Secret Service on September 11th, shortly after the attacks on the buildings, that Air Force One is next. The official gave the information to reporters on September 12th to explain why President Bush was traveling around on an airplane all day September 11th, mainly out of sight. By September 26th, according to a senior administration official, the administration had determined that the threat against Air Force One was not real. What was said about Air Force One was said because it was accurate at the time, the official said. The reluctance of officials to admit the threat wasn't credible has been what we've noticed ever since. So it was credible, then it wasn't credible, but it wasn't pointed out that it wasn't credible. So, all right. Now, how are we acting in this new world? How are the media acting in this new world, ladies and gentlemen? Secretary of State Colin Powell may have sought to improve America's image in Arab eyes when he publicly asked the visiting emir of Qatar to tone down unfriendly broadcasts on the Qatar-based satellite TV news channel, Al Jazeera. The remarks produced exactly the opposite effect. Intellectuals throughout the Arab world, yes, voiced dismay over what they saw as an attempt to censor one of the region's main sources of independent news. This is truly appalling, said Majid Al-Alawi, deputy head of the Bahrain Center for Studies and Research. I would have expected Powell to ask for more liberalization, for more freedom of speech in the region. Well, apparently he didn't hear Marlon Fitzwater's quote. Closer to home, cable subscribers in a suburb of Washington may lose ABC and a local all-news channel because of a dispute between Cox Communications and the owner of the stations. Those would be news media, wouldn't they? In suburban Washington, D.C.? Yes, they were. Ann Coulter, conservative columnist, was fired this week by the National Review Online for writing these words, quote, quoting Ann Coulter, We should invade their countries. This is talking about where the terrorists live. We should invade their countries, kill their leaders, and convert them to Christianity. She also, in a follow-up piece, singled out what she called swarthy males. And then when the National Review suspended her column, she said the National Review was run by a bunch of girly boys. And they fired her as a contributing editor. People are hysterical about speech right now, Coulter says. Everyone's comments are being taken out of context and wildly misinterpreted. She was a guest on Bill Maher's Politically Incorrect. She accused National Review of having censored her. Coulter says, the Drudge Report is by far a more prominent perch than the National Review. It's impossible for anybody to fire me. So logically, it'd be impossible for anyone to hire her, too. Wouldn't it? And NBC Nightly News announced on Friday it would, at least on Friday's broadcast, would broadcast nothing but news on the subject of terrorism. I think there's a big appetite for it, said Tom Brokaw, the anchor and managing editor. It's frankly incumbent upon us to report it in a way that viewers will find irresistible. It wasn't incumbent on them to broadcast news from abroad for the last 10 years that viewers would find irresistible. But it's incumbent. All right. So Ann Coulter says things are crazy on the subject of speech right now. And as if to prove that, and as if to prove how nutty things are in our nation's capital, can I have some nutty nation's capital music, ladies and gentlemen, as I read to you an email received here this week? Harry, for the past 3 weeks, Le Show has been put on hiatus, along with several other evening programs, during the developing stages of this terrorism crisis. We felt listeners would appreciate being kept up to date. Since I joined WAMU as program director on September 10th, I have been reviewing archives of Le Show and the September editions and gauging listener comments, mindful of the need for more humor in public radio in general. I'm sorry to tell you that our audience's response to the program has been very discouraging. And in its current form, I have serious doubts that there is enough original humor in Le Show to justify continuing to air it. I will continue to monitor its progress, and I'm happy to talk with you or your team, now or in the future, about its development. I do believe there are many positive ingredients to build on, and I am hopeful I can reverse this decision at some point in the future. Sorry to have to give you the disappointing news. Best of luck, Mark McDonald, Director of Programs, WAMU, Washington, D.C. I emailed back. Please, I'd love to have you share with me any thoughts you have on the show's future development. I'd especially appreciate you pointing me in the direction of more original humor. Unquote. No response. So I'm going to have to do one more show without that valuable input. Hello, welcome to the show.
Screaming and hollering, how can that stop? It comes out paper thin.
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this very special edition of the show. Maybe one wishes it wouldn't be so special, but, you know, that's not in our hands, is it? I saw a handler of one of the dogs that's being used in the rescue effort in New York say this week, describing the task, which is a difficult one, of course, for all involved. But she said, you know, as long as you keep it fun for the dogs, they're willing to keep working. And they're called the dumb animals, aren't they? But see, anyway, ladies and gentlemen, there are National Guard troops, armed National Guard troops, at Los Angeles and San Francisco International Airports. I think there are armed troops at many other airports throughout the United States. And if you've never traveled abroad, if you've just only traveled inside the United States, this may seem like a shocking view to you. I just recommend, when you feel confident enough to do it, get on a plane and go to Italy sometime and see what you see in the airports in Italy. It's been 25 years since they had their fight with terrorism in Italy. They had, was it the Red Brigade, I think? They had a lot of local terrorism in Italy. And ever since, there have been 18-year-old kids with big, fearsome-looking guns walking through every airport. I mean, you fly into Milan, you think, you know, Milan, the fashion capital, fun, great food. 18-year-olds with guns the size of houses walking through the airport. So, in so many ways, what we're doing right now, ladies and gentlemen, is we're joining the rest of the world. We're finally coming out of our little bubble, our little blessed cocoon, from which I think America's job has been to be in this little bubble, in this cocoon, and to sit here and use that position from which to spin out fairy tales to beguile the rest of the world. The rest of the world loves them, and they're fairy, both, you know, conceptual fairy tales in terms of entertainment and material fairy tales. But we're joining the rest of the world now. For real. Maybe. Maybe not. We'll see. This week's apologies, Prime Minister Ariel Sharon of Israel. He's apologized for what he called a misunderstanding caused by his warning that the United States risked appeasing Arab nations the way Europe appeased Adolf Hitler before World War II. Unfortunately, the metaphor in my words was not understood correctly. Oh, it's our fault. And I'm sorry about that. That's the kind of apology I make in my marriage all the time. Oh, honey, I'm sorry you misunderstood me. In offering his extraordinary statement of contrition, the Prime Minister evidently hoped to salve the wounds. All right, well, he'd do a better job of get better salve. Almost apologizing, Silvio Berlusconi, the Prime Minister of Italy. In a meeting with Muslim ambassadors in Rome and an interview with the Saudi Arabian Daily, the Italian Prime Minister insisted he had never spoken the incriminating phrases about the superiority of Western culture over that of Islam. They'd been attributed to him during his visit to Berlin by left-wing journalists eager to discredit him. My culture does not allow me to say such stupid things, he said. That, ladies and gentlemen, that deserves to be on a plate or on a sampler, just up on the wall, because it's such a great way of calling back any quote you've ever said when you need to. My culture does not allow me to say such stupid things. Within his own Forza Italia party, the unexpurgated version of his comments, as reported by the original news report, was posted on the party's official website, even though he handed out Baudelaireized versions of his comments, which excluded the anti-Islam quotes. But this guy's got more trouble than that, Berlusconi, a former media magnate. Always good to elect those people to office. He's had the Italian parliament pass a law in a hurry that critics say will hamstring judges in their cooperation with judicial authorities abroad. The reason for the unseemly haste, according to opponents, is the law will protect Berlusconi, and some of his closest associates from the risk of being convicted of corruption. He's now on trial for corruption of Roman magistrates in Milan, where the boys walk around with guns the size of houses. My culture... Okay. Always good. Always good. Just not to lose track of other people in the news, terrorism expert Gary Condit, senior member of the newly formed House Intelligence Subcommittee on Terrorism and Homeland Security, has put his condo on the market for $130,000, only $13,000 more than he paid for it 11 years ago. This according to the Washington Post. The price leads the Post to surmise that Condit may not run for another term. His office didn't return phone calls. Lloyd Grove of the Washington Post took a quick tour of the apartment on the fourth floor of a 90-year-old building. Entering through a narrow hallway and being careful not to soil the plush white wall-to-wall carpeting, Grove writes, "We found ourselves in a living room dominated by a puffy black leather sofa and a severe glass coffee table. A white ceiling fan sliced the air. We passed an unidentified man apparently preparing to make an offer on the high-ceilinged 660-square-foot one-bedroom pied-à-terre. We checked out the half-bath and small kitchen, cramped and dark, and stepped into the master suite where we found a full-size bed with a black-and-white comforter and a dozen unlit candles on the nightstand, their wicks singed. The wall closet was mirrored top to bottom, as was a giant wardrobe atop which was perched a big television set. At the base of the wardrobe, an elaborate set of wooden foot massagers. In the full bath, another candle, this one very large and very red. In the tiny den, no furniture, just framed posters, one for a jazz festival leaning against a wall. In the linen closet, a bicycle helmet." Celebrities are trying to do their job, ladies and gentlemen, and they're not being allowed to. New York City officials have told celebrities to stay away from the rescue efforts at the World Trade Center after a parade of well-known personalities brought work to a halt while they were shown around. Permission to be allowed through the site's strict security to see the devastation has become the hottest ticket in town. Those running the recovery effort say it's time to stop the gawking. Among the celebrities who've come to Lower Manhattan, Muhammad Ali, Bette Midler, James Gandolfini, Don King, the new Miss America, Chevy Chase, Billy and Alec Baldwin, and Candace Bergen. Some celebrities have been invited. Others have talked their way onto the site. "It is a test," writes one newspaper. "It is a test of a person's celebrity to see how far through the security cordons they can go before being turned back. I would get to the Meadowlands in New Jersey before being turned back. That's the measure of my celebrity." Richard Shearer. "Hello, hey, Dick! Dick, my bro!" No relation. Director of the city's Office of Emergency Management said, "Enough was enough. We've asked celebrities and people in the entertainment business to please not go to the site," he said. "Those people who try to go on their own create problems." Celebrities also, according to news reports, distracted the rescuers. "They think they're helping," Mr. Shearer said of the celebrity. Dick Shearer, Harry, you're... Can I just," he said of the celebrity visitors, "in some instances you shouldn't be distracting these people. That's a very dangerous construction site right now. It's a crime scene. It needs to be treated accordingly," says Mr. Shearer. No relation. "It's the world's largest crime scene," the FBI reported. Which, you know, seems appropriate under the circumstances. And just in case you think everybody's focusing on this, some parts of the world do have other fish to fry. North Korea has announced that a 15-ton air hammer has been made a national hero. The machine has been working for 30 years without fail, according to the North Korean news agency. It was awarded the title Hero of the Republic, a Gold Star Medal, and the Order of the National Flag First Class. The hammer, this is an air hammer, deserves a reward for contributions to producing many parts necessary for railway transportation and the industrialization of the country. The machine joins a long list of communist heroes. A 15-ton air hammer, the newest hero of the Republic. Congratulations from all of us here, and probably from WAMU in Washington as well. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, I don't want to be misunderstood just because I have amusement at the concept of a WAMU in Washington. I still want to voice right here my thanks and appreciation and my love for my affiliates all around the country. This is not an easy time for them to broadcast this show, and if you appreciate it, you might let them know, too. This is Le Show, and here's some news that you may have missed this week. During his presidency, Bill Clinton faithfully kept an audio diary, recording his impressions by speaking into a tape recorder at regular intervals. Didn't they warn him about that? My God. Now Clinton has a collection of around 80 audio tapes, from early in his first term to the end of his second. Robert Gottlieb, Clinton's editor at Alfred Knopf, has confirmed the existence of the tapes. I can tell you I know that he did that. I assume they will be of help to him. I haven't the faintest idea what's on the tapes. I'm waiting. A few members of Clinton's nemesis, Ken Starr's staff, expressed surprise such tapes existed and were not turned over to the Office of Independent Counsel. Are you bleeping me? Gasped one former Starr staffer when he was told about the tapes. This absolutely blows my mind. Unless the tapes have nothing in them about Monica Lewinsky or any of the other investigations. continued this lawyer, who demanded anonymity be mispronounced, and mispronounced be mispronounced. Even the decision of whether or not they were relevant would normally be the determination of a court, according to the lawyer. Clinton may have struck an agreement with Starr excluding the audio diary as irrelevant. Clinton's office referred the Washington Post to his Washington lawyer, who declined to comment. Clinton made tapes, ladies and gentlemen. How about that? How about that department? And now, ladies and gentlemen, the following is a fictional recreation of a broadcast not heard in your area, much like this one.
From the, what would you call this, the forecourt? From the forecourt of the San Bray Pharmacy in Beverly Hills, where Cipro is always in stock. This is Strictly from Blackwell. I am Blackwell. And I know, it is very, very rough for all of us. But I think for the people in the creative professions, this period of time may, I don't know, be easier. What do you think? Because we always have our hearts out there where people can pick at them. And now everybody feels like this. I think it is a time of greater empathy and understanding and unity, yes, because America does stand most united when it stands up for the Star-Spangled Banner and then sits down again. We have two wonderful guests who will bring us great, great insight in these times when who knows what is going to be in fashion, when, and who even cares. But maybe we do. Maybe we should. Joan Rivers, who is such an old friend that she is new again, is here with us. And Joan is here with us today because she's not somewhere else. I guess that's true of anyone, but especially you, Joan.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Thanks, Mr. V. It's, you know, it's weird not to be at the Emmys that they're doing an Emmys, but it's not the Emmys.
No.
And it shouldn't be. I'm not saying that.
No.
And so it's great to be with you. And love for Melissa.
You know, she is becoming such a wondrous young lady. We're loving watching the becoming. Joan, I don't want to tiptoe around this. I don't want to step right into the middle of it.
I know.
But did you quit from the Emmy show, the Emmy pre-show? Oh, were you fired?
Look, I don't want to point fingers. I don't want to have fingers pointed at me.
No.
I don't think anybody wanted to do normal.
No.
Here they are, and look who they're wearing. And oh my God, I cannot believe her.
Who?
Show.
Oh, yeah.
Especially E. I think we could have done more dignified,
credible
analysis of what people were wearing.
Okay,
but on the other hand, I love not being at the red carpet when so many people aren't going to be on the red carpet.
I'd be
sitting there with Melissa, betting on who's going to fall off the zone first.
It was going to be me, Joan. Yeah. Do you feel that the Emmys are right in saying, come dressed for business, but not for a celebration? Is it right to be doing business at a time like this?
Look. It is in bad taste right now to talk about bad taste.
Interesting.
That's what's killing me. I think that we want to return to normal. The president keeps saying, let's return to normal. What's more normal than laughing at stars?
Incredible you should say that, Joan. And we want to get back to that because, to me, if we have not got the ability to be interested in the people who are our royalty and set the tone for us, then maybe the enemy has won and made us more like him or her. David Schlesinger is with us.
Hello, Mr. B.
He has done so much for the city of and the people of Beverly Hills over the years, and he's doing so much more. Now, David, I think you've found your mission. I think...
I know you said that.
All of the rest of the publications that you've done from mm-hmm. Beverly Hills, this and that,
yeah.
the Beverly Hills Find It Here, have just been a dress rehearsal for now.
You know, that wouldn't be a bad title for an autobiography, dress rehearsal for now.
Dress rehearsal.
Mr. B, I think you're right.
Good.
What we're doing now, you know, we made our reputation.
No, I know.
Reporting on the wonderful parties and openings.
Everything.
The restaurants, the galleries. The fabulous benefits.
The openings.
The openings that made up the social life of the world's most glamorous city,
and
Beverly
this was,
Hills.
Yeah.
And reporting them, straight down the middle.
Yeah.
No negatives.
No.
But I think that what we're doing now with Beverly Hills 911.
Incredible.
That was interesting. Yeah. This is important. And it feels so, so good to be doing something that benefits all of the people of Beverly Hills.
Beverly Hills. David, you put your point right on the nail of the head of it.
Thank you.
We are now in a different time because the woman mm-hmm. and her family mm-hmm. do not want, in a situation like this, to be running down and getting in line at Costco.
I agree with
they
you.
They want to know where the best gas masks are.
That's
and
right.
where the best stocks of what preventatives and mm-hmm. preventives and mm-hmm. preventatives
yep.
are. And this is what you are doing, isn't it?
Yeah. We're being your one-stop resource for everything you might think you need in the current environment.
Yeah,
and we just feel that, before you buy batteries, before you buy a portable radio,
water,
before you get antidotes or
whatever.
Any kind of protective clothing,
okay, good.
We should be your resource of first consultation. And I just think that's a great position to be in.
Yeah.
And for once, I can tell you that... the phones are ringing off the hook in the advertising department, which is, of course,
unbelievable.
My bedroom.
Your bedroom. Joan,
mm-hmm.
what do you
Hello
think?
Hmm?
Will you be on the red carpet when the Globes come around again?
I from your mouth to E's ears. But I think we have to, not just talk about ourselves because as much fun as that is, but, a lot of people have been hurt by this.
Yeah.
Restaurants, caterers,
Unbelievable.
Dry cleaners, wonderful people at the dry cleaners who do such a wonderful job. What are they going to clean after this Emmys, Mr. Blackwell?
No.
I'll tell you what, they're going to clean out their own cupboards. That's what's going on.
No.
So we have to get back to show business
of
because it is an important part of our economy. It is not just fun and games.
No.
It's dollars and cents in the bank. Mr. B,
and it's pain.
And I ask you this question,
which
I thought of last night.
Okay, good.
What if they gave a sale at Lohman's and nobody came?
Unbelievable. Something we're going to have to make time to think about. David,
mm-hmm. that's amazing.
The $100,000 party that people spend half an hour at and leave.
Mm-hmm.
The era is over. This is gone. This is a quote from the newspaper.
I read that.
Is the concept of the A party
mm-hmm.
obsoleted?
I don't know, Mr. B. I'll tell you what. We don't have room. We are so busy cataloging.
I know.
Where you can get the best gas masks and the best gloves and the best duct tape.
Yeah.
Just because when you're in this community and in this
world.
Wonderful, wonderful world of Beverly Hills, as long as you and I have been, Mr. B.
Oh,
you know one thing. Nothing is a commodity.
No.
Everything has a price.
Yeah.
And the price of nothing is worth aggravation.
Okay.
So
that's three things.
We have a mission, as you said earlier, and parties just, God love them.
I know.
I'd love to be back in the business of reporting.
Yeah.
The positives about parties
of
and
course.
Openings and galleries. And maybe one day when we've won this war, I will.
Okay.
But right now, I'm hearing the call, Mr. B, and I'm having a great time answering it.
Do you want to go now?
No, I'm fine.
Oh.
Can I just say, I'm not at war with E.
No, I
want everybody to know that.
Okay, no.
But I do believe that by the time of the Globes, I would love, and Melissa would love,
to
be back on the red carpet
and you
making our little fun and having our way with celebrities for any network except the Al-Qaeda network, although with my agent.
No. You know, Joan and David Scaparelli said it, I believe, the first casualty of war is fashion. We hope that is not true. We hope we will live in a world where it's safe to care. We must vanish. They need the forecourt cleared so they can start filling the prescriptions. David, best of luck with Beverly Hills 911. Joan, we will see you on the carpet.
I know
this. I feel this. Mm-hmm. I believe this. Next time, the future of Casual Friday is past. Till then, strictly from Blackwell. Bye-bye.
Yo. Come on, come on. Now every evening, when all my day's work is through, I call my baby and ask her what we could do. I mention movies. She doesn't seem to dig that. And then she asks me, why don't I come to her flat and have some supper and let the evening pass by by playing records with sounds of groovy hi-fi. I say, yeah, yeah. That's what I say. I say, yeah, yeah. Such a thrill, it's hard to tell you because I'm trembling still. But pretty baby, I want you all for my own. I think I'm ready to leave those others alone. No need to ask me if everything is okay. I got my answer. The only thing I can say, I say yeah, yeah. That's what I say, I say yeah, yeah. That's what I say, I say yeah, yeah. That's what I say, I say yeah, yeah.
You gotta do that. Ladies and gentlemen, apropos of people bringing their own agendi to the fore at this moment, and apropos of people who will be in next week's apologies, that's just a bet, that's just a guess, that's just a calculated, educated guess. The Reverend Lewis P. Sheldon, chairman and founder of the Traditional Values Coalition. Now, I don't think you've heard this many other places, but this is on the level, this is from the news. Reverend Louis Sheldon said this week that public and private relief agencies providing assistance to the survivors of the September 11th terrorist attacks should not give aid to surviving members of gay partnerships. I'm going to repeat that because I'm filling. The Reverend Louis P. Sheldon, chairman and founder of the Traditional Values Coalition, says that relief agencies providing assistance to the survivors of the terrorist attacks should not give aid to surviving members of gay partnerships. Groups such as the Red Cross, he says, quote, should be first giving priority to those widows who were at home with their babies and those widowers who lost their wives, unquote. Assistance should be, quote, given on the basis and priority of one man and one woman in a marital relationship, unquote. Louis Sheldon. The conservative leader said gay rights organizations are seeking to capitalize on the crisis. They're taking advantage of this national tragedy to promote their agenda, Sheldon said. Sheldon said he was prompted to make his comments by reports of distribution of aid to gay partners. That's how they were taking advantage of the national tragedy, by getting aid. and by the advocacy of such assistance by gay groups. There's no question, he said, that groups like the Empire State Pride Agenda would very much like to redefine what marriage is and how marriage functions. And who... marriage functions. Oh. If we could redefine how marriage functions. But no, I'm going to get back to Louis Sheldon's quote. Redefine how marriage functions and who enters into marriage, he says. Okay. Of course, Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell have already gotten into... Jerry Falwell was on our first this week's apologies. Pat Robertson has never commented on the comments on which Jerry Falwell was forced to apologize. But Louis Sheldon putting in his bid right now to be in next week's apologies. And we will remember you. Let's see. There is hot property. You can't stop the dealing. Ooh, wasn't that a... No, it wasn't. Nicolas Cage just put his Malibu home on the market at just under $6 million. 4 bedrooms and 3.5 baths and about 3,000 square feet. David Spade has listed his Beverly Hills home at close to $3.9 million. He wants to buy a property with a tennis court. These are people who are not going to ground zero. They got their priorities straight. They're doing real estate. Victoria Principal has sold her 3-acre property near Santa Barbara for about $3.5 million. And Tom Freston, CEO of MTV, and his wife Kathy have purchased a Beverly Hills area home for close to its $4.6 million asking price. His wife, by the way, a former model, produced Transformational Meditations, a set of 3 CDs offering advice on losing weight and developing relationships. One follows the other, doesn't it? As night follows the day. Yeah, I don't usually read what the spouses of people engaged in real estate deals were, but I just thought, that's so damn enlightening. Now, Dateline Las Vegas, you know that the tourism industry has been terribly, terribly affected by in the wake of the September 11th disasters and the wave of fear that has overcome many in our country. A lot of people aren't getting on planes. Las Vegas is now betting that a never-before-released Frank Sinatra tune, along with a $13 million advertising campaign, that's lucky, will lure tourists back to Vegas. The tune, It's Time for You, symbolizes the primary message of the campaign. It's okay to want to get away for a couple of days, according to Rob Powers of the Vegas Convention and Visitors Authority. Television spots began running this week. We didn't feel it was appropriate to say, come to Las Vegas and have a good time until this week, Powers said. But a national survey of 1,800 adults convinced the city's promoters. Consumers overwhelmingly said they wanted information about Las Vegas. The centerpiece of the campaign is a commercial that features Sinatra singing as images of people having a good time in Las Vegas fill the screen. The song, written by Sammy Kahn, the song is called It's Time for You. It was recorded by Sinatra on November 15, 1981, for Chrysler. This is according to a website devoted to Sinatraiana. Sinatra's daughter Nancy said that to her knowledge, Chrysler never used the song in their commercials. It was offered to the Visitors Authority by the Frank Sinatra Foundation, who knew, which is donating the licensing proceeds to the benefit funds to help the families of the victims of the disaster. So that's interesting. Of course, there is another unreleased Frank Sinatra song that would seem to be even more on message.
You got to come to Las Vegas. It's cool to hang out where it's hot. Whatever game you like to play, the house is favored. The candy's liquor-flavored. Give us all that you've got. The chicks love to mix in Las Vegas. day or night, they're putting on a show. You got 50 cent shrimp, $2 lobsters. Nobody's owned by mobsters. Just as long as you remember to bring your dough. You know the sun, it always shines in Las Vegas. The golfing's great, you can bet on that. You got old ladies spending their days with those slot machines. They're losing their quarters, they're dreaming their dreams. It's a swinging affair, any time of the year. Get out of there and come up here. Francis Albert says, come up here.
I've been in this town so long, it's back in the city. I've been taken for a lost and gone, and I'm known for a long, long time. Fell in love years ago with an innocent girl from the Spanish and Indian home, home of the heroes and heroes. Once at night, Cotillion Square through life, and she was bright in the rain of the bullets that eventually brought her down. But she's still dancing in the night, unafraid of what it do in a town full of heroes and
you don't think they could have waited like one more hour, you know, to do the attack, so I wouldn't be preempted all over the country? I don't know. Am I being too obsessively personal? Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're seeing night vision footage of Kabul on our television screens right now, which forces one to ask the question, where is Arthur Kent when we need him? You know the scud stud? Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this edition of Le Show, just another edition of Le Show that was done without the valued comedic input of Mark McDonald at WAMU in Washington. The program returns next week at the same time, hopefully over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, on the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through Armed Forces Radio, ? On shortwave at WBCQ The Planet, 7.415 megahertz, and on your computer, your trusty, dependable old computer, whenever you want it, at two locations, www.kcrw.com and www.harryshearer.com. And it would be just like peace in our time. It'd just be like many more apologies coming our way. If you'd agree to join with me then, would you? Alrighty. Thank you very much. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. The show internet services by Steve Mack. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of SAS, the satellite service of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.